This podcast may contain language that is not appropriate for all listeners and bad accents. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over For Weddings and a Funeral, episode 9, the almost last episode. And a lot of stuff happens in this. A lot of stuff. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one and catch up on all the Four Weddings and a Funeral. It's a great show on Hulu. Or listen to our episodes from episode 1 because they are fantastic. And we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? We hope you are ready for one dry kiss because we got a banger episode for you today. Four Ooh. Weddings and a Funeral, part 9. And I am here with my co-host, who I would definitely put wallpaper up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night with, Ooh. Corinne Edding.
And I am here with my co-host, who wrestled an octopus of an episode, took those arms 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then an additional 9 to make this very long episode happen, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Yes, I did the outline and I turned it in at literally 0 hour. Corinne said, I need X amount of time. And I'm like, I got this. I had to pause, stop, sleep between all of it and the ending, because it is an epic ride. There's so much happening. Everything's coming to fruition. It's like a pimple about to be popped because we're at the second to the last episode. I know. I'm mad at the episode, so I said that. Yes, I did.
So, Tamara, what do you have going on in your beautiful life?
You know, just moving and shaking and doing. Both of us are recording on a Saturday morning today because we both have parties to go to tonight. As I said before, I lagged my ass on this episode and we also had all those technical recordings. So we pushed the recording to today. And Corinne, what are you doing this evening? What parties are you attending?
Well, I just want to say I'm such a party animal. The last time I partied was with Squeesh at her baby gender reveal party.
Mm-hmm.
Like a rock star, I did.
I know. I kept telling you to put your shirt back on and stop drinking the whiskey out of the bottle. All of her church friends were scandalized.
You know, I was trying to make a bikini out of the salami pieces. So you just need to hush yourself. And also, I don't really do parties very often. I am going to one of my friends who I sing in a choir with. I'm going to her party. It's her birthday and she's doing a big one. And so she like ran out of space and stuff. And I'm like, I like these have parties. I don't like going to them alone. I usually end up like showing up for 5 to 10 minutes at these things and being like, okay, bye.
You saw me, right? Everybody saw me? You saw me? Yeah. You? Yeah. You? Hi. I'm over here. Corinne's here. Okay, now I'm going to go.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Just in case you were wondering, mm-hmm. aside from my fear of parties and people, we have this woman who I'm in the choir with. We have a big concert coming up. We're singing an Ola Yellow song, of course. I'm sure you're very familiar with Ola.
Oh, is that like the sequel to Oye Como Va?
Exactly. Kind of like that, except not at all. And then we are doing Mozart's Coronation Mass. So there's lots of Latin.
Oh, Latin. Like,
not like Oye Como Va.
Like that Latin?
Yes. Yes, exactly. But it's very enthusiastic. And so there's going to be a small orchestra. There's going to be a choir. Obviously, I'm in it. And then we're going to be all like, Maritime Unam! You know, it's going to be very exciting. So that is what is coming up on my exciting life. Woohoo!
Okay, Corinne, a bit of advice. If you're going to this birthday party, I don't think you would be frowned down if you try to make a bikini out of salami yet again. Yes. I think your problem arose during the gender reveal party when you tried to get their pastor to eat the salami off of your tatas. I think that's where they draw the line.
I was being generous, okay? I was sharing.
It took a lot of salami to cover those tatas, and I didn't want to be selfish. I get you.
I'm just, I'm a giver.
You sure are.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, nibble carefully.
But they will take offense if I have a salami bikini at this party because the birthday woman is vegan. So, yeah, that would just be really bad form.
Okay, well, then you're just going to have to, you know, pivot.
Tofu does not hold up, okay?
I have a proposal. Bitchin' sauce. Smear some bitchin' sauce on your chest.
Yes, like body paint. Bitchin' sauce is so good. You were so right. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Although I know you like bitchin' sauce so much that you might wind up licking a titty or two throughout the evening if you have it on there. Just saying.
You know.
I know my friend.
My tatas are not that large, so.
She is jiggling them at me though, folks.
Yes,
she's jiggling
am.
The tatas at me. Yeah.
I'm only a C cup, so. There you go.
I'm a fucking double D. I'm not sure. I think it might be more if I actually hoist them up and put them where they're supposed to be, but it's hard to tell.
But I got a cool shirt.
Mm. Oh?
Yeah. So I was trying to buy some pants and I like online and I did buy some pants. One that was size quote 16 to 20, which did not barely make it past my knees. It was not size 16 to 20. They were supposed to be magic pants. They weren't magical. And then the other, which was more appropriately sized, I just couldn't quite get it closed. And they had weird cuffs on the bottom. I thought it was just a styling thing, but I was wrong. The cuffs were like that tall.
She put her hands to about 8 inches, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. I also picked up shirts, which I'm keeping all of because they were cute. And there's one. Oh my God, it's so cute. I may wear it to my party.
Let's see it. It is an Emily Rocks shirt, and Emily is playing a pink guitar. She's in all black.
And it has cutout shoulders.
Oh, shit. It does. Okay, that was a reveal, because I couldn't tell. Oh, that is a cute. It's sort of rock and roll. That is super cute. And it's like kind of a tie-dye-ish, but it's subtle because it's gray and black. That looks like something I would wear, Corinne. That looks like, I think you need to give me that shirt.
I definitely think that you would look fantastic in it. And I do agree. I am biting a bit out of your style. My style and your style had a baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think yours needs to be a little more present. Like you need a few little stars in there to fully make it like equally me and you.
I can make that happen.
I know you can. It's my suggestion there for you. A little gift.
Thank you.
So I, this evening, am going to Larry's cousin's anniversary party, which is super exciting because they are Jehovah's Witnesses. So they don't celebrate holidays or anything except for weddings and anniversaries. And I've always wanted to get to know Larry's family a little bit more. And I know his aunt and his kids pretty well. And so it's his aunt's daughter that's having the anniversary party. So I'm very excited. And I saw the text exchange on Larry's phone because his cousin's like, hey, are you coming? And he's like, yeah, we'll be there. And she's like, are you bringing your girlfriend? ?
He's like, the one I'm living in sin with. Yes. Yes.
Yes, I am. They're not judgmental Jehovah's. So that's good.
Don't be a judgmental Jehovah.
No, don't be a judgmental Jehovah. Which is why I get along with his aunt really well, because he always says, he's like, she's into her church, she follows the word, but she doesn't push it on people, and she doesn't judge you if you don't. She mm-hmm. knows that it's like, yeah, you know, other people have their own beliefs, and that's fine.
Now, from everything I've heard about Aunt Tat is that she's a pretty cool person, and you know, I hope I one day get to meet Aunt Tat, as being an extended member of your family and all. So, speaking of which... I told my mom, I was like, Mom, Tam wants to be on your healthcare stuff. And she's like, she does? I just didn't want to overwhelm her. And I figured you'd pass it on to her, but I totally will add her on to it. So
yeah,
you're going to get the family updates now, just FYI. She just didn't want to.
I'd rather hear. Yeah. I want to hear it from the horse's mouth.
Yes.
And then I could be like, Corinne, oh my God. Barbara? And then we could discuss.
Yeah, and then I can say, what? I didn't read the email. Can you fill me in on what happened?
I see where you're coming from. You're like, hey, you're going to be on my mom's email list. Therefore, I don't have to read it. And you could just give me the cliff notes.
You are Bramara, after all. She used to fill me in on these things. Like, hey, you're supposed to be on top of this. And I'll be like, what? Oh, okay. I'll show up.
Mm-hmm. Mother's medical interpreter extraordinaire. You're welcome.
By the way, I have a doctor's appointment for you to go to with her in a few weeks, just FYI.
Oh, right. Because I'll be available. Definitely. You know what's funny? Is I'm in such a good place in my life right now. Aside from the grenade exploding, mm-hmm. I told Larry, I was like, oh my God, the day before yesterday, I was making my lunch, made my salad, was getting a bag of chips because I love having a little bag of chips when I, you know, get the variety pack box. And I always get the kind that has salt and vinegar chips, which are my favorite. But the fucking salt and vinegar chip to Cheeto ratio is unheard of because they put 6 bags of salt and vinegar and 16 bags of Cheetos.
Now,
and I really want to write the company and be like, could you just make a box where you switch those? That would be great. Thanks.
Yeah.
And so we were at the bottom of the box, like 2/3 of the box of chips were gone. And we have it up above our refrigerator because it's freaking Costco size.
Yeah.
So I bring it down and I'm rifling. I'm like, oh, what do I want? Do I want Sun Chips? Do I want Cheetos? Do I want Frito? A little glimmer of a blue bag was on the bottom. And I shifted through everything. And sure enough, I know I didn't see this because there was a bag of salt and vinegar chips left. The heavens opened up. My day was made. And I smiled for like 10 minutes because I'm all, yeah! Anyways, that was just funny because I'm like, God, the stupid little things that bring me joy. And Larry's like, that's why you're happy all the time because you just find joy and little things like that. And it resonates. And I'm like, true, but also same thing happens with bad things. So if I could just, you know, kind of temper it so it's all good, less bad, that would be great.
Speaking of health things, Tam, what's going on with your whole, you were exploring the whole sleep test thing.
Oh, yes. Due to my friend Corinne's suggestion, I took a sleep apnea test and I am positive for sleep apnea. It's not as severe as Corinne's, but they said that I had 31 interruptions an hour. So, yep, ordered a CPAP machine. I got the one that goes over your nose, not your mouth, and I really hope it works. So I'm getting that hopefully in the next couple of weeks, and I will fill you in on the results.
Great. Okay, I have tips for you and gentle listeners if you are going through this. One, if you find yourself just like being super tired all the time, it may not be that you have sleep apnea, but you don't have to snore to have sleep apnea, and it's possible that you do have sleep apnea. So you just get the test. It's a super easy thing to do. You wear a little watch and one thingy on your finger.
And a thingy on your chest.
Oh, yeah, the thingy on your chest. Yeah, that didn't really end up working out for me, the thingy on my chest. But yes, still.
Neither with me because I pulled it off. I have oily skin and they're like, it's not going anywhere. They're super strong adhesive. Don't worry about it. I rolled over, went pop. And I'm like, liars.
Yeah. No, I had ish too. So yes, that didn't work out so well. But advocating for yourself in the healthcare system is a pain in the patootie. And it's a learned skill. It's not something that you just automatically know how to do. It's something that it needs to be taught. Basically, you learn it either through failure or through internet or through friends and family or whatever.
Or you might have a fucking great doctor that actually listens to you. And if you do, hang on to them.
Yeah, seriously. So when you're diagnosed with sleep apnea, you have a respiratory therapist who you see who is like, here's the CPAP machine. Here's what you do with it. Blah, blah, blah. They have all of these samples of different kinds of CPAP masks and stuff. And so if you're like wearing something and it isn't feeling right to you in a particular way, there's different ones and different sizes that they have that they can just give you to try. And so part of their job is for you to be like, hey, this one isn't working for me because of X, Y, and Z. Do you have anything different for me to try? And they can be like, here are some different possibilities of things that you can try. And they will give them to you. So just an FYI.
The one therapist that I talked to when she gave me my results kind of scared me because she's like, do you want a nose attachment or do you want a mouth attachment? And I'm like, give me a nose attachment because I know if I get the full mouth attachment, I will have some side comments from the other side of the bed about being a fighter pilot, at least for a few nights from Larry. So let's just do the nose attachment. And she's like, okay, but there's just one thing, like if you're a mouth breather, like it's just going to push the air out your mouth and you're going to gag. And I'm like, sounds pleasant. Great. Yeah, I'm going to chance it.
I'm a mouth breather 100%, but I have just a nose attachment. And because when you do open your mouth, it goes, it's true. It's an interesting effect. However, I think because I'm getting enough oxygen and there is that feedback, I actually sleep with my mouth closed when I have the nose thing on. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. So there's hope for me.
There is hope for you. Yes.
Anyways, and that is ODK's Medical Advice Corner. I like my morning husky voice. Anywho, we have talked long enough, Corinne. We have got to plow through this uber juicy, chock full episode. There is a lot going on, and there was a lot going on last time. Can you refresh our memories about what went on in episode 8?
I will try. I'm going to miss some stuff. So much shit went down. I'm going to be very broad strokes in the synopsis, like super duper broad.
Okay.
And if you feel like I'm missing anything pertinent, please chime in, Tam.
Okay.
Synopsis. This is what happened last week on Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode 8. Zara, in her quest for social media stardom, creates a game and introduces it to game night. At game night, she finds out that No secrets and her social media influencer days are over. Andrew, Bryce, and Marcus all crash game night. Marcus, who had been invited by Ainsley because she swears there's a love connection between Marcus and Maya, there's not, and Marcus doesn't appreciate the manipulations. Bryce, who has been invited by Gemma and Duffy because they know Ainsley hearts him, she does, and ultimately confesses this to Guffy, but also says he's too old and not sexy enough, and Bryce overhears and leaves. Ainsley leaves later to profess her love, but continues with the backwards compliments, and shockingly, he shuts her down. Huh.
Oh, wow.
I know. Andrew crashes as well to show Tony, too, that he can hang with Tony's friends, and he's a bust at the party until he shares his story of love lost, which inspires Ainsley to do the aforementioned romantic gesture with backwards compliments to Bryce and Maya, who had vowed with Cash to get to know each other in a very unsexy way. But after hearing Andrew's story, she runs off to Fatima and Bashir's wedding, because surprise, they're getting married, and they resolve to make it work. Duffy and Gemma are getting along, and Duffy is tutoring Gemma's son. And surprise, Zara is pregnant, and Craig figures out that Cash and Maya are a thing. Ta-da!
That's a great synopsis. Very succinct. And I think you hit all the points except why the fuck nobody kicked Andrew out, because he was not invited to game night, but he just showed up. And I'd be like, I really don't want to spend the whole evening with my boss, especially when he's crashing my friend's party.
Yeah, but how do you tell that to your boss man? You don't. So, speaking of crashing the party, not really. Bad segue. Pam.
No, I was like, oh, really? Are we doing that again? It's the Corinne show, and I actually got snuck in through the back, and you let me in. That's great. Yes, thank you.
No. Will you send us down the path of disaster that is episode 9?
I will, because you know what? I wrote this outline. Therefore, it's my party.
And you'll cry if you motherfucking want to, okay?
I almost did writing this goddamn thing. But anyways. We open with Cash and Maya spooning naked in bed. Even their spooning has more chemistry than Maya and Duffy.
Mm-hmm.
Cash looks at her tenderly and asks, are we really doing this? They are. But between the recognition, satisfaction, and potential, Maya also has a nagging realization and murmurs, "Oh, I'm going to have to leave this room and have a very difficult conversation." Because she must tell her bestie that she's sleeping with her ex-fiancé. That this hanging out, quote-unquote, experiment has proved that Cash and Maya truly have deep feelings for each other. This is not a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
Cash strokes her cheek and says, "I want to tell you something, but I don't know if I should." Maya smiles and says, "I think I know what it is, because I wanted to say the same thing to you last night." Cash asks, "But I shouldn't, right? It's too soon." "But it's just three little words." Maya agrees, but she's smiling and says, "Yeah, way too soon." This emboldens him and he states tenderly, "My foot's asleep." She smiles up at him and nods, "My foot's asleep too."
Aww.
And they kiss. And it's a good one.
Yes. Ooh, man. They're just like sizzling with the sexual connection. Even my parents who watched it were like, they have a really good connection. I don't know why anyone would be interested in watching it besides Maya and Cash, because the other people are kind of awful. But they have a really good connection. That's what my mom said.
I would put it up there with, for some reason, we've been watching The Office. Larry likes to have the TV on when we fall asleep, and sometimes he just puts on a really long series that we could just let play out.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw like an interview with Jim, and he was talking about how when he was auditioning for the part, he met the actress that ultimately played Pam,
mm-hmm.
and they were the love interest in The Office. And he was like, "As soon as I got the part, I'm like, who got the Pam part? Who got the Pam part?" And when it was the actress he chose, he was like, "Oh my God, that's amazing," because they had on-screen chemistry. And I think Maya and Cash are kind of up there with the Jim and Pam chemistry from The Office.
Aww.
They have it. It's there, and you can feel it. If you haven't seen the series, that's what you're in for, because it's just like you can see that they should be together above and over everyone else that's sort of kind of getting together in the series.
I can't with that show, because it just reminds me of being at work and I'm being treated crappy at work, and I'm just like PTSD. So yeah, no.
I know. That is like your Bridesmaids series. Because it's that one you kind of feel like icky. You're like, oh, it's cringy. And I know you don't like cringy.
You know, the stuff that's supposed to be funny where the bosses are being like inappropriate and shit like that. I'm like, no, that's happened to me. That's not funny. It's just horrible. Yeah. So mind you, I do not mind anybody else like enjoying. This is just total PTSD, visceral reaction from me on the part of that show. Yes.
Don't lie, Corinne. Don't get off your anti-office podium preaching the good word of don't watch The Office.
Look, I've told you before, and I'll tell our gentle listeners, I'm basically a socialist, and break down the communist.
Mm-hmm.
Not communist. What's the fucking term?
Capitalism.
Shoot. Capitalist. Thank you. It started with a C. Break down the capitalist monarchy bullshit stuff. Yeah. Bring it down.
Power to the people.
Yes, power to the people.
ODK does not endorse socialism and doesn't...
There's nothing wrong with socialism. There's wrongs with everything. Just matters how it's used, you know.
Right. ODK does not take a social stance in things, and this is just the opinion of Corinne.
I'm like, I take a social stance in things. I'll share. I don't care. So, meanwhile, across town... Oh, and Tam says, by the way, where the hell did Maya and Cash have sex? It didn't look like Cash's room. It was a super lush bed with a beautiful fabric headboard. And and Asif was not underneath them. Did they screw at Ainsley's house? Tamara asked. And gentle listeners, I have answers.
Oh, thank God, because they did not. But I just didn't know where they were.
They, Cash and Maya, were booed up at the Scion Hotel where Fatima and Bashir got married.
Ah,
yes,
because for a second before it became evident, I was like, that's super fucked up. So then I wrote that in the moment. I probably should have just taken it out, but still.
Yes, well, I have answers, so done. Meanwhile, across town, another sort of couple are stirring. It's Tony 2 and Andrew. Andrew sits on the edge of the bed, smiling at a bare-chested Tony, and says, since we had such a great first night and a great second first night, I think we should just keep going and pencil another one in, and also one for the weekend. But Tony 2 is not on board for anything long-term and reminds him, I can't be in a relationship with you when I'm an illegal immigrant and you're voting on a bill to get rid of me. Andrew assures him. It's not an actual vote, just a vote of support. But that still stings Tony too as he throws his hands up and cries, what am I going to tell my family? Hell, what am I going to tell myself? Andrew doesn't want this to end. He has hearts in his eyes and responds, well, then there's only one thing to do. A vote no. Tony smiles broadly at this statement, and Andrew continues softly, I've grown rather fond of you. Tony answers back, that's the most romantic thing you've ever said to me. Andrew smiles back warmly, but then totally ruins the moment by uttering, but don't think I'm going to change any of my other political positions. I mean, global warming is an absolute hoax. Speaking of political things, no, it's not. It's not an absolute hoax.
Have you watched the Weather Channel lately?
Yes. To which Tony too cries out in frustration, ugh, throws the covers off himself and onto Andrew's head.
Maya comes home. So she didn't screw cash in her bestie's house, but we already knew that, thanks to Corinne. She heads downstairs calling, Ainsley, we need to talk. But she shuts her mouth when she realizes Ainsley's not alone. Gemma and Duffy are there consoling her because she is very upset. Maya tentatively asks, what's wrong? And Gemma informs her, Bryce overheard Ainsley insulting him last night when she went over to his house to try and fix it. She continued insulting him. Ainsley defends, I just said we were an unlikely pair. Why should a 55-year-old man just assume he should be with a young woman? What are we, in a Clint Eastwood movie? Duffy looks at her matter-of-factly and states, I'm saying this with love, but you sound like a shallow, miserable monster.
Oh!
But Ainsley is... I know. Duffy should.
Pot kettle.
Don't throw stones, buddy. Yeah. Don't throw stones. But Ainsley's undeterred and goes on a tangent about what a catch she is and how she could go on Bumble and find a ton of age-appropriate hot men that would be stoked to match with her. Mm-hmm. She grabs her phone and points to the first promising profile on the dating app and then practically drops it when she realizes it's Duffy's profile. But whereas Ainsley is disgusted, Gemma is intrigued. Oh, you're on Bumble, wanky wanky. And Duffy admits that he's on them all. Bumble, Hinge, one for vets, animal doctors, not military. Well, as a matter of fact, one for vets too. Ainsley grumbles, I wish I didn't like Bryce, but he's so different from anyone I've dated before. Gemma agrees because he seems to be having an effect on her. Ainsley continues, and I can just be me around him. I could eat peel and eat shrimp in front of him, and he wouldn't look at me differently.
That's like one of Tam's dating standards on her profile. Must be okay about me eating peel and eat shrimp.
No. I take it one step above. They have to go with me to Stinking Crawfish, where they just like put the seafood in all of its spicy juices on the table with no plates. And you wear a bib and you crack crab claws and shrimp all together. So you get really messy. And then I just like watch them the whole time. Just chaw on something like, how are you reacting to this? I know the lower half of my body is full of crab juice. How do you feel? You good? All right. We can go on another date.
Nice.
She trails off as Maya informs her friend, that sounds like love. Ainsley realizes this is true and says, I'm in love with him. I gotta fix this. She rushes towards the stairs, but not before asking Maya, did you want to talk to me about something? But Maya brushes her off. Oh, don't worry. It can totally wait.
Over at Gemma's house, Duffy is at the dining room table tutoring Giles when Gemma saunters into the room cheerily calling out, Duffy, I have that permission slip for the field trip to see the Julius Caesar play. So Gemma slides open a drawer and is surprised. Oh, did you hear that? No squeak. This drawer always squeaks. Duffy smiles slightly and says, I know. I always heard you complain about it, so I fixed it. Her face brightens and she thanks him for the kindness. And I think this is the first time that Duffy has done anything for anyone outside of himself. Like that we've seen him do anything for anyone outside of himself.
Are you kidding me? He graced Tabby with his 1,400-page book, so she could be, like, enlightened by it? The trials and tribulations of a cod family over 50 years?
Yes, and ultimately serve as his editor while he's pretending to date her, but he really just wants her as an editor. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's totally an act of generosity for sure.
He let her participate in molding that epic saga.
Yay. Sometimes Tabby's like up late at night, like while she's sleeping next to Nicholas Sparks, and is like, motherfucker, motherfucker. I had to read through all of that. Boundaries, girl, boundaries. So Gemma's face brightens and she thanks Duffy for the kindness. Gemma's demeanor is somehow lighter and happier. When Duffy is around, her icy prudeness seems almost playful. She asks the two of them, so, what should we all do for dinner tonight? Dinner and a movie again? Giles agrees and proposes that they watch the second half of Coco, since the previous night they couldn't finish it because Duffy was crying so hard. Duffy protests, it was just when that little skeleton started singing, remember me. But I can't. I have plans tonight. Gemma jokingly asks, oh, is it a hot date with one of your Bumble conquests? But when Duffy confirms this, her face falls. Her shift in demeanor is so sudden that Giles notices, but she gradually regains her composure as Duffy describes the woman he's meeting. Her name is Amanda. She likes margaritas and the beach. She looks pretty cool. Gemma abruptly grabs her keys, saying, well then, we should take Duffy back to Peeth. We wouldn't want to keep Amanda from her margaritas. And she hurries out of the room.
Bad choice of words. That makes Amanda sound like an alcoholic. Across town, Ainsley's on a rooftop terrace that's artfully decorated. She's primping the decor when Bryce walks through the door and asks, Ainsley, what are you doing here? Her face lights up and she says, Bryce, I just wanted to... But she trails off when an attractive older redhead follows him in. He's on a date? She quickly regains her composure and rushes over to the woman, saying, hi, I'm Ainsley. Bryce introduces the woman as Dawn and Ainsley as his decorator, and then stands there expectantly because she still hasn't told him why she's there. The silence spurs Ainsley to explain, oh, I just realized that there was still a part of your house that I hadn't decorated. She gestures towards the terrace. I still had a key, so I kind of broke in and I wanted everything to be perfect. Bryce furrows his brow at this in confusion, and Ainsley softens and says a little quieter, because you deserve it. Because you're great, and I'm sorry I didn't realize it sooner. Mm. He breaks into a small smile, and Ainsley remembers, oh, Dawn's there, and hurriedly adds loudly, as your decorator! Bryce quietly thanks her, and there's a few awkward moments before Ainsley begins seeing herself out, but not before blurting, enjoy the wine, and there's steaks on the grill. They probably need to be flipped. Okay, bye. And then rushes out the door. Once she's gone, Dawn marvels at the terrace and says, wow, what a great decorator. Can I get her contact info?
The next day, Maya is at work texting someone when she notices Marcus glaring at her from behind his computer screen. She promptly puts her phone down and states matter-of-factly, Marcus, I'm going to say this one more time. I am not in love with you. I will never sleep with you. In fact, I'd rather sleep with our old gay boss before sleeping with you. Just then, from around the corner, her gay old boss, Andrew, briskly emerges, saying, I'll keep that in mind in case it doesn't work out with me and every man on the planet.
Ooh, sick burn, Andrew, sick burn.
I love that line so much. Marcus the brown noser promptly jumps up with the speech he's proofed for the hard borders bill. But Andrew hands it back, explaining he won't need it before heading into his office. This is news to Maya, and she is hot on his heels, calling out, wait, why? Are you changing your vote? That seems like something you would do. Wait, why?
Yeah, no, you can't just leave the room after saying that. That's information. Come here. Come back here.
Marcus follows too, arguing, of course not. He wouldn't jeopardize the bridge restoration project.
Oh, yes, the bridges. I forgot about the bridges.
The bridges, yes. Maya and Marcus have a heated exchange over whether bridges are more important than immigrants when Andrew interrupts, confirming, and I don't think it's an either-or thing, because we want our bridges to actually be safe when we go over them.
No, yes, but it doesn't sound like it's like a structural or safety thing. It sounds like
a
we must bring it to its old grandeur type of thing.
Yeah. Andrew interrupts, confirming Maya's suspicions. He's changing his vote. Maya excitedly cries, I changed your mind and I'm making a difference here. Andrew shuts her down by saying, will you stop taking this as a personal victory? I have it on good authority that a few rebels are withdrawing their support, so my vote won't matter. The bill is dead. Marcus looks at him confused and asks, just so we're clear now, we're anti-bridge? Marcus.
So through that interaction, I'm like, is he changing his vote, or is he like, yeah, I'm still going to vote the same, but it's not going to matter. So, you know, the bill's not going to pass, because it was kind of like, we'll get to it later, I guess.
No, he was intending on changing his vote.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because he flip flops a few times in this episode.
100%.
Yeah. At the same time, Zara and Craig are meeting with their OBGYN to discuss their ultrasound because they're having a baby and maybe they shouldn't after this next statement. The doctor asks if they have any questions and Zara asks seriously, when do babies start to talk? Because I'm sure I heard talking the other day. The doctor's at a loss, hands them an informative pamphlet while stating a little incredulously, so this is the first child for both of you? Craig pipes up, oh no, I have a... but doesn't finish his statement because he remembers that he relinquished his parental rights for his daughter, so Zara finishes for him. Oh, Craig has a daughter. While Craig clears his throat to cover his emotions. On the cab ride home, Zara encourages Craig to reach out to his daughter Molly because now they have a great reason to. She's going to be a big sister. Craig shakes his head sadly. I can't. Aww. I promised Julie I'd stay away. I'm such a moron for signing those papers. Corinne agrees. If you don't remember, yes. She said that at that episode when he signed them.
Yes.
But Zara knows, not that he's a moron, but that he misses his daughter. She's seen him Facebook stalking Molly's soccer coach. And Craig confirms this by scrolling to the coach's page and showing Zara videos of the coach's son, who's terrible at soccer. But every so often in the background, Craig can catch a glimpse of his daughter.
Aww.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Back at the Aldridge office, Maya's hard at work when her phone rings. It's the recruitment agency.
Is that how they say it in British?
Yes, that is exactly how they say it in British.
The C is pronounced sh.
It's the recruitment agency she reached out 2 months before. They have a position that's just opened up. Maya hurries into Andrew's empty office to get some privacy and explains, I'm not really looking for a job anymore. When I called, I was super unhappy, but things have changed now. I'm just mildly unhappy. Ah, isn't that the way of the world?
Yes. Do I want to jump out of the frying pan and into the fire to potentially be more unhappy at a different job?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. She asks, what's the job? The recruiter informs her the position is for a nonprofit that backs female candidates of color for office. Maya practically pees herself with excitement as she hisses into the phone. Oh my God, that's my dream job. What are you going to say next? Idris Elba is my boss? The recruiter states flatly, no, he's an actor. It's unlikely that he'd be employed in this field. Eh. But it doesn't matter because Maya's super interested and agrees to interview for the position. Wouldn't it be funny if Idris Elba showed up to the interview and was like,
hi, I am the founder of this nonprofit that backs candidates of color. That checks out. That could totally happen.
The recruiter adds one crucial detail, that her interview will be scheduled for the next day, Eastern Standard Time, because the position is in New York City.
New York City?
Yes. Shit.
And in a separate office, a lawyer walks into her next appointment, who is Zara, with a neck brace on? Mm-hmm. The lawyer stops dead in her tracks when Zara turns around, and Zara apologizes profusely because the lawyer is Julia, Molly's mother. Julia recognizes her immediately and asks, "So you didn't break your neck on a booze cruise?" Zara peels off the neck brace and explains, "I did, but that was years ago, and I lied to your receptionist because I really needed to see you. Aww. Craig misses his daughter, and he's changed, and I've changed. We're married now." Because the last time Julia saw Zara, she was shrieking that Julia was a homewrecker in the museum because she mistakenly thought Julia was Craig's mistress. Julia nods knowingly. "I know. I saw your wedding on TV." Zara adds, "And we're having a child. This should be the happiest time in our lives, but it's not. Craig thinks about Molly every day. Your little girl, not the drug." Julia's icy demeanor begins to melt as she admits, "I have been thinking about contacting Craig a lot. Molly's been asking about her dad, but I'm not ready yet." Zara sees the inn and offers, "Why don't we say he's an uncle or a friend from church? My mom brought home loads of them." Julia protests a few more times before finally agreeing to let Craig come to one football match as long as he stays silent and invisible, a.k.a. Molly can't know he's there. Zara readily agrees because Craig wants to be involved in Molly's life in any way possible.
And once again, for our everybody else in the world except for Americans, football is soccer.
Nuh-uh. Molly dons that helmet and the shoulder pads, and she's a junior linebacker. So
great. Women can play American football, too. Yes. Mm-hmm. Across town, walking down the street, Maya and Cash talk about her interview and how this could potentially mean Maya's moving back to America. She's not sure if that's what she wants because she built a life here. Cash is encouraging and reminds Maya how much she's constantly talking about all the things she misses about New York. Until she points out one glaring problem. "But you're not going to be there." Cash contemplates this for a moment before offering, "Well, maybe I could move with you. You'll get the job and I'll work on Broadway. I mean, it might be selling cashews on the street, but it'll still be Broadway." Maya contemplates this for a moment before realizing, maybe that's not such a crazy idea. I mean, if my conversation with Ainsley goes as badly as I think it will, a little space between us may be a good thing. Cash brightens. "So are we moving to America? Should I read the Wikipedia article about baseball?" He puts on his worst Brooklyn accent and puffs his chest and says, "I'm a New Yorker." Maya tells him to slow down because she still needs to get the job first. Cash assures her she will get it, and she's smiling at this new shared future that they could have together.
Built on a web of lies! Back at Gemma's house, Duffy is having another tutoring session with Giles. When Gemma walks in, Duffy asks her, "Hey, what are you doing on Tuesday? One of the parent chaperones dropped out, and I wondered if you wanted to go with me to the
Julius Caesar's feet trip. You see, what you do is it's a museum full of feet, and you get to rate them.
Oh, I can just imagine the people that go there. No, that would not be a field trip for kids, I don't think. The Julius Caesar field trip. "You could sit next to me." Gemma smiles broadly and agrees, saying, "Yes, it's a date. I mean, not like an Amanda date. How did that go, by the way?" Duffy admits that it went pretty well and they're seeing each other again tonight. Gemma is surprised. That is so soon. While Giles informs her from the couch,
"The date went very well. Duffy found out that him and Amanda both like movies and music."
Gemma irritatedly says, "Imagine that. What are the chances? Thank God you two found each other." She heads towards the door to take Duffy back to Peeth before he stops her and asks, "Actually, can you just drop me off at the restaurant?" Amanda found this great farm-to-table place. But Gemma interrupts him, practically yelling, "I don't work for you. You work for me. I can't just drive you around everywhere." Duffy's confused and asks, is this about the date? Do you not want me to go? Gemma denies this, and then angrily suggests that maybe Duffy shouldn't work for her anymore. She can find another tutor for Giles, one she doesn't have to drive all over God's creation. And he sadly agrees and leaves, much to Giles' dismay.
Okay. Wait, we have a lot to unpack here.
Okay.
First, at the top of it, Giles says, Mortui sumus, which, he explained, was, we are done. But no, in Latin, it's actually, we are dead. And Duffy's like, no, it's not. And he says, I'll give you your money back to Gemma,
Gemma.
For that session. But that having been stated, I have very strong feelings. Because I think there is a big difference between kindly taking a person who works like miles and miles away in the country, so it's hard for him to get back and forth because Duffy doesn't have a car for some godforsaken reason. So it's hard for him to get back and forth to, back to Peeth, than being like, oh, let me just take you to your date. Like, get a fucking Uber. Seriously.
I think Duffy mistakenly thinks that they're pals because she's been so warm to him. And he was probably just like, oh, no, he'll never do it again. I'm pretty sure he'll never ask her to take him anywhere besides the Peeth school. But
well, he's fired now, so.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, theoretically, if he wasn't fired.
Oh, Duffy.
I might do the same, honestly, because especially if the date is closer than Peeth school, like, hey, it's on the way and it's like 7 miles versus 14, then I might be like, you won't have to drive me as far. And it's not like it's going out of your way. Now, if he asked her to pick them up at the end of the night, then I might be like crossing the line.
I understand your thinking on the matter. And I also am very much like, if I were in the same position, I'd be like, oh no, I'm going to a date in town, so I'm just going to take an Uber.
We are not asking for rides compatible, Corinne. This podcast needs to end now.
No.
Gentle listeners, will you please weigh in? Who is right, me, about this issue? Would you be opposed to asking somebody for a ride elsewhere when they generally take you home if it is on the way? I'm just saying on the way, because if it wasn't on the way, I wouldn't do it. If it was on the way and a lesser distance?
Yes, we would like to know. I just have experience with this due to years of babysitting and animal sitting and whatnot. But I'm sure that there are people who have a different viewpoint and totally agree with Tam. And have years of experience as well.
Most people. I mean, what?
Oh! Okay. Well, later that evening, Maya attempts to have... I'm changing the subject if you didn't know. The conversation with Ainsley. But notices that her friend is getting dressed up and asks, are you going out with Bryce? Ainsley shakes her head, explaining the events of the previous night, how Bryce was out with an age-appropriate woman, and how she'll probably never see him again. So, I have a bumble date with a nice enough-looking guy who has a boat, which seems shallow, but that's what I deserve. She begins heading out, but then remembers, did you want to tell me something? I'm in a rush, so can you say it in 5 words? Maya slowly shakes her head, because, oh no, this conversation is definitely going to need more than 5 words. And I'm going to pause for a moment, because this happens, like, throughout the episode. Maya is actually legitimately trying to talk with Ainsley, and Ainsley is just fucking MIA all over the place. So she's like, oh, hey, bestie, yeah, I have time for you. 5 words? Let's go, bruh. Like, I'm just like, yeah.
I wonder if secretly Ainsley is kind of doing that because in the episode before last, I believe, like, Maya was MIA for her. So she was like, I miss you. I'm smelling your clothes. You're never around. So maybe she was trying to pad her life with other activities. And now that Maya's like, pay attention to me, she's like, nah, bitch, remember like a few weeks ago when I needed you and I wanted you around and you weren't? Well, payback's a bitch.
So she's being passive aggressive AF. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to Ainsley at a posh restaurant with the date. It takes 30 seconds for us to figure out he is a pretentious douchebag. First, he apologizes for having a problem with the valet, who obviously doesn't know how to park a Bugatti. Am I right? Ainsley chuckles good-naturedly until he adds, "Now, if he parked my boat like that, you'd be helping me hide the body." Ainsley's smile gets tighter as he continues, "Don't worry, I'm just kidding. I don't kill people, just animals." And I think that he's like a few seconds away from pulling out his phone and showing her his big game hunting pictures.
Yes. Yeah, not animals like he gets a BB gun and stands on the street. He totally gives the vibes of, "And I killed this giraffe on safari 2 summers ago."
Yes, exactly. Her cool facade begins to slip, regretting this night out, especially when the douchebag says that his hobbies include sex. Does that count? No, it does not count. It is not a hobby. And if you do consider it something as a hobby, then you need to go to Sex Addicts Anonymous, because you are centering it way too much in your life. Thank you very much. They are interrupted by a man the douchebag thinks is their waiter. But when Ainsley turns around, she gasps. Who does she see at the restaurant table? Does she duck and cover under it, cowering in fear? Find out with us after the break.
And we're back. And the person at the restaurant table is, it's Idris Elba. Ooh, just kidding.
Yay. He's like, "I am here to rescue you from this horrible date." Thanks, Idris Elba. We all need him in our life.
It's an app where you can summon Idris Elba to just come and like rescue you from a bad date. Can somebody make that happen?
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. That would be date perfection. Here at ODK, we want only the best from our gay and straight patrons. And what is better than Idris Elba rescuing you from one bad date after another?
Especially when the person sees that it's Idris Elba and be like, "Oh, he's coming to get you?" Yeah, bitch, he is. Okay, bye.
We're calling the app Idris Elba to the rescue.
There's got to be a play on words we could stick there.
Idris Elba's you out of the way.
Yes. But sadly, it's not Idris Elba. That app will be coming soon. It's in production right now. It's Bryce. He's there because Maya called him and told him where he could find Ainsley. And Bryce needed to see her toot sweet because he wanted to explain that the redhead at his house was his sister.
Ooh.
Ainsley smiles gratefully, then looks at the table and tries covering her ass by saying, "Oh, yeah, well, this is my brother." Bryce gives her a quizzical look, which causes her to come clean. And she basically kicks her date off the table and shoos him away, saying, "Sorry, this would never work. Okay, bye."
Yeah.
She begins apologizing to Bryce, but he cuts her off because he's had enough of her speeches. They sit, and he tells her, "Maybe we won't work on paper. Maybe we won't work in practice either, but I refuse to let Ainsley Howard become a what-if in my life just because of a few rude comments." That would be like putting down a horse for having a burr in its side. Ainsley smirks and said, "Oh, that's a real hick way of saying it," then immediately apologizes for being so shallow. But Bryce disagrees. "I don't think you're shallow." He thinks that she's one of the deepest people that he knows, and it's one of his favorite things about her. They kiss across the table before Bryce leans back and asks, "So, did your brother order an appetizer? Because I'm starving." Causing Ainsley to chuckle because this date is already 1 million times better than the last one.
Mm-hmm. And Ainsley needs to learn to stop when she's ahead. Just like, zip, 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 zip it. Mm.
Yep, that is a learned skill.
Ooh, no kidding. Which I have not mastered yet. But, you know, I'll get there one day. Later that night, Maya gets a text from Ainsley that reads, "Not coming home tonight, going over to Bryce's. You're a good friend." Maya smiles, pleased with herself, and tell those words, "You're a good friend, you're a good friend, you're a good friend," echo, echo, echo in her ears because of her shh secrets and the curse your son but inevitable betrayal moment she knows is about to come. The next day, Maya is having her interview with the New York City nonprofit. She's hiding in the bathroom stall as the interviewer states, "You're qualified and all your previous employers commend you on your professionalism. The job is yours if you want it." Maya begins thanking the woman when a nearby toilet flushes. Maya thinks fast and loudly, talks over it, and immediately closes the computer screen. She knows she is taking the job and immediately goes into Andrew's office to break the bad news. But surprisingly, Andrew guesses, you're quitting and you've accepted a new position in New York City. Maya is shooketh. He continues, they already called here for a reference, and I gave you a glowing one in spite of all the self-help guru rah-rah antics you feel the need to bestow upon me. Maya thanks him genuinely, and Andrew tells her, Marcus should really be thanking you because I was going to fire him, but now I can't. Which causes a small smile to flash across Maya's competitive as fuck face, because she's always knew that she was a superior employee, and now it's finally been confirmed. Hashtag winning!
Yeah, we all knew that, Maya. A little later that day, Craig and Zara are at the park. Zara has Craig blindfolded and he complains, I don't know why I still have to be blindfolded. I heard the bus say we have arrived at Hyde Park. But he is surprised when Zara removes the scarf and he sees that they're at Molly's soccer game. He practically runs in the other direction, but Zara assures him Julia said it was okay. He just has to keep a low profile. He kisses his wife and then immediately screams, oh, what the hell? We're already losing? And when an opposing player scores a goal, Zara gives him a look and he quietly repeats, oh, look at that. We're already losing. But his cool demeanor is short-lived. The coach, whose Facebook page Craig was cyberstalking, will not take his subpar playing son out of the game. Craig loudly and excitedly complains to Zara that Molly's the best player and he doesn't know why she's benched. Mm. The coach hears this and tells him, oi, shut up. Craig puts up his hands, realizing he's not being invisible or silent, but can't help himself when the coach's son scores on his own goal. Craig explodes. It's obvious you're not playing your best players. You're keeping your son in the game while he's over there picking his nose. The coach is incensed and comes over, pushing Craig in the chest, asking, who do you think you are? Craig backs up, not wanting to make a bigger scene than he already has, but he's saved by Julia, who's rushed over towards the commotion. She stands between the altercation and answers forcefully, he's Molly's father.
Ooh.
The coach immediately backs up while Craig leans out from behind Julia and shouts, yeah! But Julia shoots him a look and he quiets down. Zreg. Smile at each other because this just might be the beginning of a beautiful family ship.
Across town, Maya calls Cash. I got the job. Cash responds, I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is I'm going to take you out someplace great to celebrate. The bad news is I can't move with you. My brother thinks I'm abandoning him and my father still won't talk to me. Unbeknownst to Cash, as he is saying this, Haroon wanders to the bottom of the stairs and can hear the whole conversation. Maya understands that his family comes first and they both commit to doing the long distance thing and visiting each other to make it work until things get better. Papa Haroon hears this, and even though he's livid from all of Cash's recent decisions, like taking an acting gig and not only getting fired from his finance job, but the shh secrets of not telling him, this bit of information seems to weigh heavily on Haroon.
At the same time, at Andrew Aldridge's office, a group of elderly, boisterous politicians barge through his door.
Ugh.
One of them is Rupert, the tubby, weasel-faced man. You might remember him from the last episode where he was hiding from his wife and insulting immigrants at the Lady Elaine party. Rupert and his colleagues have come to inform Andrew that they have the votes to pass the hard borders bill. Andrew's confused because he was sure they'd have a few rogue MPs that would block it, but Rupert happily informs him, the Scottish MPs folded when he offered them a James McAvoy meet and greet.
Mm.
Ick. One of the other men that came in with Rupert pops open a bottle of champagne and declares, enjoy this French champagne, boys. It's going to be the last that crosses the border in a very long time.
Ew.
And as it's getting poured into glasses, Andrew quietly asks, would it be too terribly inconvenient if I voted no? Rupert looks at him incredulously and his face reddens as he declares that Andrew's no vote will stop the bill from passing. They only have a one vote advantage. Andrew almost sheepishly explains, well, you see, I'm in love with a man. Andrew's colleagues all gasp in disbelief before Andrew rolls his eyes and interrupts them. Oh, no, that's not the scandalous part.
It seems that I have fallen in love with an immigrant, and he's opened my eyes and expanded my heart. I can't do something that I know is wrong, even if there might be professional consequences.
Mm.
Rupert is incredulous and shrieks about all the ways that Andrew's professional career will be ruined and how the monarchy itself will fall apart, which ultimately will force Her Majesty to get a job at Payless.
Mm.
Rupert concludes his spiel by asking if that's what he wants, and Andrew sheepishly says, no, not particularly. His colleagues take this as an assurance that he will vote the right way and file out of his office in a huff.
In a huff. Next, we see Cash praying in a cemetery at his mother's grave. Eventually, he is joined by his father, who quietly tells him, you always came to your mother when you couldn't talk to me. Cash is surprised to see him there, but Haroon has something to say. Your mother and I came to England to give you a better life, but if you're not happy here, then what did we do it all for? If you want to move to America, move. Cash can't believe his ears and argues, what about Asif? He'll think I abandoned him. Haroon shakes his head. My brother lives in Pakistan, and I see him every day. This morning, he FaceTimed me from his bathtub. The two chuckle, and his father assures, we'll always be close, and I will always be proud of you. And if you're going to be an actor, be the best actor, like a Pakistani Keanu Reeves.
Cash. That's a great comparison.
Yes, I agree. And Idris Elba and Keanu Reeves had a baby. Cash would be born. So there you go.
Oh, Cash would be born.
Oh, in vitae veritas. No.
See, so you really should get that Idris Elba's you out of the way, because maybe you could be the mama of the... Wait, no, it'd have to be... No, never mind. Scratch that.
Cash smiles at his father, relieved, as Haroon tells his wife's grave in Urdu, we raised a good son. And I am totally verklempt over that section and feeling a little teary after reading Tamara's script version of it. I was like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Thanks.
In another grassy area, Julia, Zara, and Greg are sitting at a park bench. Julia chastises, you were supposed to be quiet, but I appreciate the support. That coach is an asshole, and I am pretty sure he's having an affair with one of the soccer moms. The trio look at the field, and indeed, the coach is standing inappropriately close to one of the moms and tucking, oh, look, here's a stray hair. Let me just tuck it behind your ear. No. That's like along the lines of touching somebody's leg. You know, it's just like, no. That's just a little too, no. Mm-hmm. No. Oh, Tamara, let me just tuck this little stray hair behind your ear. Like, if I did that to you.
I'd be like, you better quit right now.
It would just be odd, right?
No, because
odd.
You go like yeah. this. You'd be like, do this to your head if I had like a hair in, at a wonky place. Or like, go here. Go. Then you would like motion it on yourself. That's the Corinne way you would do it.
Or maybe I would like take the hair and kind of like stick it back onto your head in a different place, but I wouldn't like caress your ear. Like,
yeah, if you did, I'd probably slap your hand away. Hey, what are you doing?
I'm just trying to give you a wet willy. Don't worry about it.
That would be more accurate. Yeah. If your finger was anywhere near my cheek, it would be like, la, 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 la.
Just then, Molly runs up and greets her mom, gushing about how good she did in the game. She asks, who's Craig? And he freezes, saying, who's Craig? Who's that guy? And he freezes, says nothing, and waits for Julia to tell her daughter, this is Craig, my friend from church. Molly says, nice to meet you. And Craig tries to contain himself because this is the first time he's had a real conversation with his daughter. He says, you were great out there. Can I show you a few power moves with the soccer ball? She happily agrees, and they jog a short distance away to kick the ball back and forth. Zara takes the opportunity to ask Julia, can we spend Christmas together this year? Julia responds quickly, too soon. And Zara sadly echoes that, too soon.
Later that evening, Andrew goes to Tony's house. When he knocks on the door, he is met by an older black lady who gives him a stern once-over. And when Andrew asks to speak to Tony, she calls out, Antonio, some cartoon-looking butler's here to see you. Tony jogs downstairs and shoos the woman away. And once he and Andrew are alone, Andrew informs him that the immigration bill will pass tonight. Tony asks, but you're still voting no, right? Andrew explains that he can't. He's thought of a solution and says, I know it's only been a couple of months, but you've changed me. You've changed my life, and I can't imagine it without you. What I'm saying is I love you, Tony. He gets down on bended knee, and just behind Tony, his family has milled about in the doorway, curious to see what's going on. There's like 11 people behind him.
Yeah, yeah, it's a crew. It's a whole crew of people.
Andrew proposes marriage, and the woman who answered the door hisses in Tony's ear, say yes, dumbass. You're not rich. But Tony only pauses for a moment before asking, are you going to marry my grandfather, too, or my Aunt Lenora, or any other immigrant in this country who's put at risk? I'm sorry, but the answer's no. Mm. Then he quietly closes the door on Andrew, who looks devastated because that's not the answer he was looking for.
But I don't blame Tony, too. Don't blame him
at all. Neither do I. Yeah, you think I'm just going to gloss over all of your beliefs because I'm safe as an immigrant in this country? No.
No. That night at the school field trip, Gemma runs into Duffy outside the theater, apologizes for firing him, and says, the truth is, it wasn't because I'm sick of driving you. You're a great tutor for Giles, and driving you back to Peeth is not such an inconvenience. Duffy looks at her in disbelief because she proclaimed all of this with very thinly veiled emotions and asks, is that it? She nods her head unconvincingly and Duffy adds, well, I guess I'll just see you on Monday then. Gemma leaves and hurries down the street before her feelings get the best of her. A few blocks away, Maya sees Cash and what he's cooked up for their celebration. They stand outside a theater and Maya sees the marquee for the musical and excitedly gushes, Mamma Mia! Oh my God! I'm so glad I wore my flats! We are going to be dancing in the aisles! She puts his arms around his shoulders and says, oh, I'm gonna miss you. Cash responds, I'm gonna miss you too, which is why I think I should come with you. Maya looks at him in disbelief and she asks, what about your father? Cash explains, he changed his mind. She hopefully asks, you're coming to New York? Cash answers in a bad New York accent, I'm coming to New York. I'm going to be a New Yorker. Only original car parts.
Oh my God. Oh, I forgot. Wait, good callback, Corinne. Wait, good callback. They share a celebratory kiss. Just as Gemma rounds the corner and sees them, she is shooketh, turns tail and runs straight back to Duffy to tell him he's still where she left him, and she excitedly grabs his hand, explaining, Duffy, I know you have to go in there, but I really have to tell you something. She pulls him away from his students, and once they have some privacy, he blurts out, it's the best part of my day, too. Gemma tries interrupting him because that's not what she needed to tell him until his words sink in and she lets him continue. He says, driving back to Peeth with you is the best part of my day, and I don't own a country home or a credit card, but there's no other person in the entire world that I'd rather spend time with than you. Aww. Gemma gets hearts in her eyes as she admits, I feel the same way. And they share a long, lingering kiss.
Aw, and it's a good one.
Oh, and it's a yes, and it's kind of cool because when they kissed, they sped up the people around them while they were like in real time. So it looked like they kissed for probably 45 minutes.
And way better than any kiss that Duffy and Maya ever had together.
Better than any kiss Duffy and anybody had.
Yeah, yeah.
Back at Ainsley's house, there's a late night knock on the door, and she's surprised to find Andrew Alridge outside. He rushes inside, saying frantically, I must speak to Maya because I have a big decision to make tonight and I need her advice. Ainsley informs him that she's not there and asks, have you tried calling her? Andrew admits, several times, and if she hadn't quit, I would totally fire her for that. This is news to Ainsley, and she asks, wait, what do you mean quit? Andrew explains that Maya was offered a job in New York and she's taking it. And Ainsley practically smacks herself on the head saying, that must be what she wanted to talk to me about. She immediately puts out an urgent text to Craig, Zara, Gemma, and Duffy, writing that they need to talk about Maya immediately. Everyone in the friend group independently knows about Maya and Cash and incorrectly thinks that Ainsley, too, now knows. Ooh. And that the shit is about to hit the fan.
And the shit is about to hit the fan. This is what this episode should have been named. That shit hits the fan, bruh. Next, we see Andrew back in his office with his head on his desk. Marcus opens the door and informs him, "The bell has rung. There's 8 minutes to cast your vote." Andrew snaps, "I know there's 8 minutes. I've been voting since before you were born, since George Michael was still singing about women." He makes his way to the voting floor and he's ambushed by Rupert and his colleagues, who congratulate him on making the correct decision. They shuffle through a corridor amongst a crowd of other MPs about to cast their vote when Andrew stops and, like a salmon swimming against the current, he turns and proclaims, "I can't do this." Rupert grumbles, "For God's sake, just find another boyfriend." But Andrew argues, "This is not about Tony. This is about 1,000 other Tonys who have to live in the shadows. Real people with real hopes and dreams who are no less deserving of dignity than anyone in this corridor." His emphatic proclamation has silenced his colleagues, and on both sides, a group gathers as he continues more forcefully. "I know England is struggling, but the solution is simply not in keeping people out. We are at our best when we let people in. If you really care about the future of Britain, you will not close the borders, but open your hearts." His colleagues are all silent, and for a moment it seems that his impassioned plea has struck a chord. That is until a wadded piece of paper is flung at Andrew's head. Then his whole party turns on him loudly. The mob of people begin berating him for his opinions, but he pushes through them, hanging on to his newfound beliefs and his vote. Meanwhile, across town, Tony 22,
Tony 2.
I thought it was kind of beautiful, though. It's like his life is just getting bigger. Tony 22 is watching the news where it is broadcast that Andrew Aldridge was the lone rebel MP who killed the closed borders bill. Tony 2's family all look at him knowingly, and Aunt Lenora playfully pushes his cheek, saying, "Well, if you don't marry him now, I will." Tony has hearts in his eyes as he smiles satisfied at the television. "Is this love that he's feeling? Is this the love that he's been looking for?" Maybe. Maybe it is. It's
the way Corinne was bopping around when she sang that. She's feeling the love. Moments like these, I wish we had a video or a YouTube channel, because that was wonderful. The friends meet at Ainsley's, and there is an air of solemnness for everyone except Ainsley. To everyone's surprise, she seems pretty upbeat. She apologizes for calling them over, but she just doesn't know what to do and tells the group, "I'm just crushed about Maya." Craig approaches her tentatively and asks, "She told you?" Ainsley looks at him surprised. "You knew about it?" Craig somberly shakes his head, stating, Not really. Marcus told me, and I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner. I just didn't want you to hear it from me." Ainsley shrugs and pours everyone a glass of wine, saying, "I just thought if we all got together, we could figure out a way to stop her." Gemma pipes up, surprised. "What's there to stop? It's on! Let the record show, I only found out about this an hour ago, and I wanted to tell you right away. By the way, you're taking this all very well." Ainsley takes her glass and muses. "I mean, I get why she's doing it. I just really wish she wasn't." Finally, Duffy clarifies the confusion that's unknowingly going on in the room by saying, "Wow, you're taking this better than I thought. I don't think I'd be as forgiving if Craig were sleeping with my ex-fiancé." The friends all nod soberly, except for Ainsley, who squints her eyes and asks, "Wait, what?" Duffy quickly tries to backpedal and murmurs, "I mean, what are we talking about?"
Ainsley approaches him, her tone sharpening. "I'm talking about Maya getting a job in New York, and she's moving at the end of the month." The friend group all try to feebly get on that backpedaling bike with Duffy and mumble, yeah, that's what we're talking about too." But the cat's out of the bag, and Ainsley, incensed, asks, "Is something going on with Maya and Cash?" She's met with silence for a few uncomfortable seconds before Gemma blurts out, "Yes, Maya and Cash are together." Ainsley doesn't believe her and says so just as Maya walks in. She greets everyone cordially and is immediately confronted by Ainsley. "Are you sleeping with my ex-fiancé?" Maya's expression tells her everything. Ainsley turns away from her friend in disbelief, crying, not wanting to hear the details. But Maya tries to explain herself. We didn't mean for this to happen. I would never want to do anything to hurt you. Ainsley turns and with venom in her voice asks, we? And then practically shrieks as Maya attempts to stammer out an apology. Ainsley tells her, no, there's nothing you can say that can make this okay. But Maya has one last detail she throws down in hopes of saving her friendship and blurts. It was Suitcase Guy. I met him the day I flew in for your birthday party. I just didn't know he was your boyfriend at the time. Ainsley's face is confused and then furious. Has this been going on for a year? Maya denies this and tries to explain that it's just recent and only happened after they broke up. But Ainsley's not hearing it. Through tears, she tells her former best friend, I'm going to Gemma's house for the night and I want you to get your shit out of my house. I never want to see you again. And then leaves in a huff.
In a huff.
Maya stands there shaking in tears while everyone quietly follows after Ainsley. I would have been there and been like, hey, Maya, so tell me what happened. Give me the lowdown. I need to know.
Seriously. I'm like, you all don't want to talk about it? Like, I think they did it in solidarity probably, but I'd be like making the call me gesture. Yeah. Like,
yeah, seriously. Maya jumps into a cab and goes over to Cash's house. She pounds on his door until he comes out to find her a crying mess. When he asks what's wrong, she blurts, she knows Ainsley found out. God, I knew this was going to happen. We can't do this. I can't be with you. We're bad people. We can't start a relationship like this. Built on a...
web of lies.
Web of lies. Web of secrets. No. Cash tries to unsuccessfully console her because he wants this. He wants them. He says, we can do this because I love you. He repeats, I love you over and over again. While cupping her face in his hands and trying to kiss away her tears, but she breaks his embrace and tells him, we can't do this. She runs back to the cab and tells the driver to go, with Cash close behind. He tries to stop her, but she drives away into the night, her face streaming with tears because what she was most afraid of has finally come to pass. When she figured out that she had feelings for Cash, her biggest fear was that she would lose her friends, and it seems she just did. The end.
Gonna make moving to New York a whole lot easier now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Flee. She fled from New York to London, and now she's fleeing from London to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tam. So now it's time for the relationship rundown.
Mm.
Who do you want to start with?
Oh, fuck. I want to start with Duffy and Gemma, because I fucking love that they got together. I love the rapport that was built. I loved the changes they showed in Gemma. Duffy was still being Duffy, but I mean, that probably works for her. But she was married to an alcoholic who frequently fell asleep in places. So, I mean, might be an upgrade, definitely.
Yeah.
And that he has such a great relationship with Giles. Like, I give them 4.5 dry kisses, but only because a half of that relationship is Duffy. What do you give them?
I give them 5 dry kisses. Their relationship feels right. And I feel like Gemma brings out the best in Duffy and Duffy brings out the best in Gemma.
Also, I kind of had like an inkling. I don't think I did. When Gemma was married to her husband, I did not see that coming, which is also kind of a nice, pleasant surprise. Like, I wasn't like, they're going to wind up in the end like you did with some of the other couples. So it was, it was a pleasant surprise.
I felt like Gemma had a soft spot in her heart for unknown reasons to me for Duffy back in the beginning. And I just feel like it blossomed and grew like a summer's eve.
Okay. Who do you want to do next?
Rip off the Band-Aid. Rip off the Band-Aid. Ainsley and Maya.
Oh, shit.
That sums it up. Yeah. Their relationship is tanked. One dry kiss. I do feel like that Maya was trying to do the right thing within the constraints of the bad thing that she was doing. And also web of lies and secrets and cursed her son but inevitable betrayal. And Ainsley, she's just like, I mean, it's not like she's one to hold a grudge or anything, but...
No, maybe not Ainsley.
Maybe
no.
She's one to hold a grudge. Like, it's hard to talk with her about things. That's something I really don't like about Ainsley is how single-minded she is about a lot of things.
You can talk to her. You just have to say it in 5 words or less, basically.
Oh, perfect. My foot's asleep.
I think I give their relationship a 2, maybe a 1.75.
Nice. Okay.
Because the one thing that was kind of put on the table in this last little scene that you did, that I was like, oh, you know what? In hindsight, when Ainsley calms down, probably in like 7.5, 8 years, there's going to be one thing. The one thing that Maya could have done, or there's many things that she could have done, but the one glaring thing that Ainsley thought she did that she did not do was this going on the whole time I was with him? Because they met the day that she got to England.
Yeah.
And, you know, Maya at least has that one saving grace that was like, no, I wouldn't fucking do that to you. You guys were broken up. Even though it's still wrong, it's less wrong than had they been dealing with infidelity.
Yes. And it had been over a year since they had broken up. So,
yeah,
it wasn't like it was just, oh, he's free now.
Hey, I know you're taking off your tux from your wedding that you just ran away from, but real quick, can I ask you something?
Would you like a blowy? Yeah, I'm here for you.
What about Ainsley and Bryce?
Ainsley, Bryce. Oh, Bryce Thrice and Ainsley. Okay, I got you. So,
obviously they've made an impression on you.
They are, I understand the silver fox of it all. Their age difference is very big, but he has a lot of money. And for me, I'm like, if you're going to date somebody and get involved with somebody where there's a big age difference, money is important. And I will tell you why. It's not a superficial thing. It's a, hey, I want to go out and do things being my age, and we need somebody to take care of you and things like that when you get older, being your age, so we can still do the things that I want to do. So, yeah, it's about quality of life. And helping to bridge the age differential, because money can help facilitate a lot of more mobility than not money. But Thrice Bryce and Ainsley, they're fine. I think they work. Is Thrice Bryce a bit fatherly towards her? Yes. But does Ainsley really need somebody like that in her life? Yes. Yes, she does, because she acts like a fucking child a lot of times. I give them 3.5 dry kisses.
I agree with everything that you say, but I'm going to give them 4 dry kisses just based on the fact that they finally made me care about this relationship.
Yes.
In the last 2 episodes, I was like, don't care. Fluff on the side. It's just to kind of give Ainsley a distraction. I'm like, okay, now I'm rooting for you guys. So good on you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Bryce is a really good guy. So I'd date him in a hot second.
Yeah, totally. But then it would be closer in age than him and Ainsley.
It's true. It's true. Zraig, 5 dry kisses. We move on.
Wait. I don't think they should get 5 dry kisses. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I do want to say, though, that Zara wins real points. Like, this is where you get to really see Zara shine, is in this episode, when she's like, my boo is hurting. I'm going to go and see if I can reconnect him with his daughter and talk to his mom. And so I was like, that is beautiful that you're doing that. So go, Zara.
Imagine how much sooner in the series that would have happened had Greg actually opened up and been like vulnerable and honest with her.
Mm-hmm.
Probably would be like going to Molly's birthday parties at this point.
Seriously. Tony 2 and Andrew.
Oh, they are my 5 dry kisses. They are my 5 dry kisses. Oh, to the end, not throughout the whole thing, because I'm like, oh no, don't run, Tony. Wait, come back. Wait, run, Tony. Wait, come back. But at the end, Tony has seriously made a difference in Andrew's life. And they seem to get, like, they come from completely different backgrounds. But when they're together, like, it seems to work. So it's like the opposites attract in real time. And I want them to be the last wedding.
They shouldn't work, but they totally do. And there's something so beautiful about that. I completely agree.
It's like
with
dipping
you.
Your French fry in a Frosty from Wendy's, where you're like, that's no, that is not. Oh my God, it's delicious. It tastes like funnel cake. Yeah.
Do we have everyone? I think we have everyone.
Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay, so Tam, what do we have coming up next week?
The fucking finale of Four Weddings and a Funeral, episode 10, episode X. Just kidding.
X.
Oh, Corinne's putting her arms across each other, forming an X.
Yes. So if you have anything you'd like to say about the relationships, about my thoughts on Ainsley, or the current Tamara and Corinne debate of should you ask for a ride to a date when they typically take you home and you're providing a service for them, you can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on Instagram and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review this podcast anywhere you listen to it, we would greatly appreciate it. But we are so glad you're here today and that you hung in there with us for this series, even though it is a pretty great one. And we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we will bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time.
New York City.
Yes. Shit.